Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer on the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. We're doing this one remotely. I am in Portland right now. I'm at my parents' house. I spent the last week in Las Vegas at Summer League. Watched the young Bulls, the Summer Bulls, so far fall short of their Summer League dynasty repeat for their championship. Cody, you're back in Chicago. How's it going?
It's going well, Sean, but as soon as you left Vegas, the dreams of the repeat in the Summer League dynasty died for the Bulls. They were humming along after their final pool play game, finally got a win against the Wizards, and then on Wednesday night, they kind of got their butt handed to them by the Blazers in the fourth quarter. The dream is dead. Our credibility is gone, Sean. I think we were the ones who said, give me any reason why the Bulls shouldn't repeat as Summer League champions. Well, I guess injuries, some family reasons, and then bad players behind that. They're done. The dreams are done of the Summer League dynasty.
Absolutely. I mean, does this count as one of our bold predictions, or is that just the ones from the beginning of the season? Because we did kind of both go on record saying we thought the Bulls had a chance to repeat as Summer League champions, and that's obviously not going to happen now.
Hey, I regret nothing, to be honest. I regret absolutely nothing from that. I expected Chris Dunn to be out in full force. He did not play after the first game because of a family issue. Cameron Payne, as well, left Summer League early for the Bulls because of a family issue. Paul Zipser, he didn't even play a single game, did he? Or did he play the first one? I can't remember that far back.
Paul played in the first game, and then he hurt his ankle. And I actually talked to him yesterday, and he was walking fine. It was just at that point, if you had any kind of minor injury, that's the way this usually works. If you have any kind of even like minor injury in Summer League, it's like, what's the point of even risking it to play in Summer League? So they just kind of held him out, but he's going to be fine long term, I think.
And then Lowry Markkanen, the Bulls rookie that they got with the number 7 overall pick in the Jimmy Butler trade, didn't play in their playoff game at Summer League because of a toe contusion. The game they lost to the Blazers. So it was kind of skittish and hit and miss for the Bulls. But I'll ask you, Sean, you were out there for a long time, first three games, obviously. Just what was your initial takeaway and vibe and feel from the Bulls being at Summer League and obviously it not going quite as cohesive as they would hope when young guys are what they need to develop and bring along right now? And they didn't do that as much as they wanted, obviously, in this last week.
Well, I thought it was a little bit disappointing that they couldn't they only had one game where they had everybody playing. Because, I mean, I know you can say, look, it's only Summer League, who cares? But, you know, these guys, this group of guys, most, like, the five guys from the Bulls roster that are on the Summer League team, these guys are all actually going to be, maybe with the exception of Cameron Payne, those guys are all actually going to be significant parts of their rotation this upcoming season. So they haven't actually played together a lot because Chris Dunn just came over from Minnesota. Lowry Markkanen is a rookie. Zipser and Valentine obviously played together last year. Payne barely played with the team last year. He hasn't played with any of these guys really. So they need as many reps as possible, even though these Summer League games are kind of a joke in terms of how competitive they are. They are playing against live competition. You need to have that time to build chemistry, and so it's a little bit disappointing that they weren't able to do that. And now in the first game, I thought Lowry Markkanen looked pretty good. You know, he looked like he was shooting it confidently. He can do some different things. He can put the ball on the floor. He can post up. He can actually pass out of the post, I think, better than I thought he could before the draft. Everybody else was kind of hit and miss. Cameron Payne, I did nothing to change my belief that he's not an NBA player. I think that's my takeaway from it.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's go through some of these guys one-on-one, because, I mean, obviously the team cohesiveness is summer league is nothing like the regular season, obviously. So I think individual is where you want to look at. Let's get back to Markkanen. You mentioned your first impressions. Like, he had a terrible, was it second game
second
where
game,
he shot like one of 13 from the field. I don't think he made a three-pointer in that game, and he was just awful. I thought that first game, he had some dunks around the rim. He looked like he wanted to attack as much as he could in the paint. I thought that he kind of showcased what we expected him to be, which I know isn't earth-shattering, but, you know, he's not strong at all by any means, yet he's skinny for his height, and he's going to get pushed around. He can get on the offensive glass a little bit because he does kind of have a nose for the ball and the ability to jump and kind of grab it and just get around in there. But he gets pushed around quite a bit defensively down there. So that rebounding is going to be so key for him, not just this next year, but moving forward, I think, for the Bulls. So I think these three or four games just reinforce the fact that Markkanen's got to get in the weight room. That's a key thing for him as a rookie. I feel like he's good at shooting. Like, he looks like a natural shooter. I know he had that awful second game, but, like, he can just stand there and drain shots when he's open. I know he was heralded coming out of college because he can kind of move off shots too, or move off screens and catch and shoot. I don't think we saw quite as much of that as the spot up shooting seemed to be working. I didn't feel like when I saw him playing spurts there on TV, and I was not watching as intently as you were for the first three games, obviously. He didn't seem to do a ton off the dribble yet. I'm sure some of those things will come, but, like, I thought there was reason to be at least pleased with what you saw out of Markkanen in the first three games, because it felt like he belonged on the offensive end in many ways, even though when those shots, like, I don't get worried about a game where he shoots one of 13 because he shot 42% from 3-point range last year in college. Like, we know he can shoot, but I didn't know if you had any more thoughts on him there early on.
Yeah, I think Markkanen was definitely the most impressive of the three, or of the five guys that were, you know, that we're talking about as far as, like, actually guys who are on the team. Yeah, I mean, he can shoot it. He's skilled. He's a legit 7-foot. You know, his defense is not good, but I think out of these guys, like, I liked what I saw out of him. Now let's move on to Denzel. Actually, he's a little bit more hit and miss. He had that. You know, he had a pretty good first game. He was awful the second game. Also, he had a bad shooting night. He, you know, he's gets the shots up. Like, I'll give him that. He's never, it's just, summer league Denzel is a lot like regular season Denzel. He's never afraid to shoot it.
Yeah, the difference in summer league, though, is, like, the ball is in his hands so much. Like, remember at exit interviews this past year, like, he said, half jokingly, half seriously, like, what do you guys want me to do? Go take the ball from Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade? Like, I'm not going to do that. So, in summer league, he was counted on as a playmaker, and there are big concerns. Sean, what was your line entering this summer league, like our last episode before going in? Wasn't it like, just don't be horrible? Just, you don't have to be a star, but just make sure you look like you're normal out there and don't be bad. Was that something along the lines of what you said?
Well, I think what I said was basically that it's not necessarily a good sign if you're good at summer league, but it's definitely not a good sign if you're not good at summer league, which brings us to Cameron Payne. Which, I mean,
what's that about Cameron Payne?
Which, oh, yeah. This brings us to Cameron Payne, that if you don't look good at summer league, especially going into your third year in the league, like, it's not, like, I don't like to just say it's over for somebody, but I really just don't see a way in which Cameron Payne is an NBA point guard.
Did you just hit the eject button on the whole Cameron Payne experiment?
I mean, I wasn't exactly in the first place, but I'm definitely out. I'm fully out on Cameron Payne.
I believe he shot 9 of 26 before he had to go home for a legitimate family matter, obviously. But past just the inability to shoot, what were the concerns you saw? I mean, again, what were you seeing up close in person? What were people saying there? What was he saying afterwards? What was Fred Hoiberg saying?
Well, it was every single thing. His defense was bad. He can't handle the ball. He can't pass. He can't shoot. Yeah, I think he had 7 turnovers in the 2 games that he played. And it was just like, there's really nothing like you want your point guard, if he's going to be a rotation player, he has to have one above average skill. Even Chris Dunn, who I don't think a lot of people think is going to be a star at this point. You know, people think he might still be a rotation player. He's still an elite defender, or has the tools to be an elite defender. Cameron Payne, I don't even think has one replacement level NBA skill besides dancing on the bench with Russell Westbrook.
Oh man, you are just absolutely firing off, man. And you got to remember, Cameron Payne is a guy that, look, John Paxson isn't afraid to call anyone out. We know that by now with his postseason press conferences and such. But like, he went out of his way to point out that Cameron Payne's work ethic has to improve. And look, the Bulls have said he's in their facility a lot this summer and trying to get better. We just have zero evidence of it so far, and I have no idea how it gets better in training camp or into the season if he's still there. Like, could the Cameron Payne experiment be ending even sooner than we thought by way of them cutting him or him not surviving training camp or something? Like, does it feel that way to you? Because I'm starting to get that feeling a lot more than I had before.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Now, just to get something out of the way, when we reported the news that he left for a family emergency, one day after Chris Dunn also left for a family emergency, there were a lot of tweets that were basically calling shenanigans and saying, like, okay, you know, they're just sending him home because he sucks. I'm not going to go into details because it's obviously a private situation with him and his family, but I do know that it was a legitimate family situation for Cameron Payne that he got sent home. So I'm just going to say that first of all. Now, as far as him,
back to him. I mean, what's the long-term outlook here?
He has a 4th-year option for next season. This coming season, he's under contract. He has a 4th-year option. Let me look up the salary, the exact salary number for what his 4th-year option is going to be. Because on your rookie contract, the first 2 years are fully guaranteed. The third and fourth year are team options. I believe they've already picked up his option for his third season, but his fourth season, the deadline to pick up that option is going to be on October 16th.
Yeah, and we should point out that, like, nearly every single rookie has their – or a player on a rookie deal has their fourth-year option picked up. Like, I mean, there's a few out there that don't, but nearly all of them do. Like, something has to go really wrong for you not to get your fourth-year option picked up.
His fourth-year option is for $3.2 million.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's the money that's at issue here.
I think they're gonna not pick up the option. Now, as far as whether they actually cut him during camp, like, I think they probably won't, just because, first of all, they have a ton of open roster spots anyway, so it's not like they need to use that roster spot to sign someone else. And like, if they re-sign Nico, and we're gonna talk about that in a little bit, but if they re-sign Nico, they're gonna have 13 players under contract. So it's not like they cut Cameron Payne because they need a roster spot. You know, if they don't pick up his option, then he'll basically be on an expiring contract, which means maybe at the deadline they can use his expiring contract and a salary for a trade or something.
Yeah, so it's just something to keep an eye on. But hey, I mean, Sean, if people want to go watch the Bulls next year and see if Cameron Payne's on the roster or not, you know where they should really go?
Yeah, I actually do. I think they should go to SeatGeek, which is the smartest and easiest way to buy tickets to concerts or sporting events. Buying tickets can be complicated, but there isn't a better or simpler way to buy. Now, with SeatGeek, it's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets for live events. There's a seamless mobile experience. You can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I personally have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I've used it many times. I used it to see Tom Petty a while ago. You and I used it to see U2 maybe a month or so ago. By far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. It can be anywhere, just with a few taps, instantly find seats to anything, sporting event, concert. It searches multiple ticket sites. It'll save you money and time. It'll search all the different ticket sites to find you the best prices from anywhere. And they grade every ticket based on value in order to know if you're getting a good deal or bad deal. It's fully guaranteed. You can shop with confidence. And it is the go-to app for finding the best deals on any type of ticket. Best of all, if you are a Locked On Bulls listener, which you are if you're listening to this, because I don't know why you would be if you weren't, You can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. What you need to do is you need to go to the App Store on your phone, iPhone or Android, download the SeatGeek app, which is totally free. You sign up, you go to the Settings tab, you click Add a Promo Code, and you use the promo code LONBA. It used to be Locked on Bulls. Now it's LONBA. Use that code, your first purchase, $20 off. Do it today. Next time you purchase a sporting event or concert ticket, it's the best way to do it. So, Cody, some other stuff happened besides the actual Summer League action. While we were
we talked to
Gar Forman. We talked to Fred Hoiberg. This is the first time Fred has really addressed his situation when it comes to some of the stuff that management said about him at their season-ending press conference back in May, which was basically they said, like, he's under contract. When John Paxson was asked to name one positive thing about Hoiberg, he basically said, well, we made a commitment to Fred, and then said he needs to be a better leader. This was the first time Fred actually addressed that, and he didn't go into details, but he basically said he and John had a long conversation about it the next day, and, like, they're good now.
Do you believe that they're good now?
I mean, sure. I guess they probably are. And I think the fact that they did this trade to rebuild, because honestly, if they had kept Butler and kind of run the same team back, kept Rondo, yeah, you know, maybe added a couple more veterans to try to stay competitive, and then they started off the season, you know, below 500, I would really feel like Fred's job might be in trouble. I feel like them doing this rebuild, and, you know, to their credit, they've actually done a good job of getting players so far this offseason that are going to fit the kind of offense that Fred wants to run. Once LaVine is back and healthy, he's going to be that kind of player. Markkanen is a guy that ideally is a stretch four that you can put in Fred's offense. Even Justin Holiday, who they signed, he's an athletic 3-and-D wing. He's the kind of guy that theoretically should fit well under Hoiberg. I feel like they've actually given him a vote of confidence by doing this rebuild, because that's going to buy, not only that's going to buy the front office some time, that's going to buy Fred some time, because this team is not going to be expected to win right away. And there's also not a lot of, I mean, obviously Dwayne Wade is still on the team, but there's not a lot of, you know, superstar egos to manage like there were with Jimmy and Rondo last year. There's going to be a lot less drama, a lot more low maintenance guys. I think they're giving Fred every opportunity to succeed with the Bulls.
Yeah, you know, I agree most everything on that. It's probably a longer discussion for later in the offseason, obviously, too. Fill us in on what Gar had to say when he talked to you guys, because he obviously expressed that he has no regrets about rebuilding in the Eastern Conference despite all these star players leaving in the form of Paul George, for example, Jimmy Butler with the Bulls trading him. Obviously, but
Millsap.
Millsap, there's another good one. Like, Gar had no regrets. Like, just fill us in on what he had to say, kind of.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, well, first of all, yeah, he said he doesn't regret rebuilding, which, I mean, I thought was kind of interesting because, yeah, I mean, with Indy trading Paul George, with Atlanta losing Paul Millsap, you know, some other teams made moves, there's going to be room for some teams to get in. But the Bulls, if they had kept Jimmy and put some you know, veterans around him and, you know, some shooters and some players that maybe fit better with him than, you know, the roster they had last year, they could probably be a 4 seed in the East, just given the talent exodus. Really the only team in the East as far as playoff teams that's gotten clearly better is Boston, adding Gordon Hayward, but Boston was already better than Chicago anyway. But I mean, I think it's pretty clear, and it's been clear for a while, especially from what their return was in the trade, that they were committed to doing this rebuild and that what other teams did wasn't really going to influence it. Now, the other thing that we kind of have to touch on here is the Nikola Mirotic situation, which as far as we know is still status quo. You know, the sides are talking. The Bulls say they want Nico back. From all indications, Nico wants to be back in Chicago. There's really no market for him. I mean, you look at, you know, what's happening in free agency, cap space is just kind of drying up. These guys aren't really getting. Otto Porter got his max from the offer sheet from Brooklyn that Washington matched, but you're not really seeing guys get huge long-term deals the way that we did last summer. And it's kind of screwing over the restricted guys, the guys like, you know, like Nico, like Bojan Bogdanovic got a 2-year deal with Indy. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope only ended up signing a 1-year deal with the Lakers. Granted, it was for $18 million, but still, you know, the Knicks overpaid Tim Hardaway Jr. because they're the Knicks. But, like, other than that, like, there's really, like, these restricted guys are kind of getting squeezed out of the market. So I kind of feel like whatever number Nico and his agent wanted, the Bulls might be able to get him back for $10, $11, $12 a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think Nico obviously has still been at the Advocate Center working out? Like, every indication is he's coming back to the Bulls here at some point. The way he would, the path for him to get paid from the Bulls would be to get a late offer sheet from someone, which you already pointed out is probably not going to happen. Many reasons there.
Most people don't have cap space.
Do you think there's any chance he takes the 1 year qualifying offer or reaches a 1 year deal for some amount of money so he can hit unrestricted free agency next year somehow? Or do you think he's still eyeing a 3 year deal, 4 year deal even? Like, I don't feel like 4 years might be in play quite as much anymore for Nico, because I don't feel like he wants to like be locked into like a 4 year, $40 million year deal when he thinks he's worth more. But do you think he could sign a short-term deal to hit unrestricted free agency a year from now?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he signed the qualifying offer. I think it's absolutely in play, and that would actually kind of tie the Bulls' hands, because then if you sign the one-year qualifying offer, you can veto any trade for that 1 year that you're in town. I don't like which, so you know, that could kind of tie the Bulls' hands. But that would certainly, if they are really just far apart on the money and they don't think there's going to be a resolution, yeah, Nico could bet on himself the way Jimmy Butler bet on himself when he turned down the extension, the way other guys have kind of bet on themselves with these one-year deals or with these short-term deals and ended up getting paid. You know, if Nico has a consistent year last year, you know, next year, you know, and is kind of more the guy they were hoping he would be the last three seasons, then he can go out and get paid. Now, I would say the downside to that is I don't think the market is really going to be any better for free agents who aren't stars. Like, obviously, next summer, okay, LeBron will be fine. Paul George will be fine. Russell Westbrook will be fine. The top guys are going to be fine. But these middle-class guys who, you know, last summer you saw a ton of those guys just get these outlandish contracts, I don't think the market is going to be any better. Like, the salary cap isn't going to make another huge jump. I don't think the market's really going to be any better for guys like Nico in that, you know, in Nico's class of player or in his tier of player than they are now. So I almost feel like it might be in his better interest to just lock up. If they're willing to give him a 4 year deal for maybe a slightly lower annual number or a 3 year deal for a slightly higher annual number, just lock up as much guaranteed money as you can get right now, because the market, I don't think, is going to improve for free agents.
Yeah, and this Nico thing, obviously, I mean, it could still play out for several weeks. I mean, it could be done tomorrow, but it could play out for several weeks too. Another decision the Bulls are going to have to make that is probably going to hit them in, what, 3 months, is October 16th is now the deadline for Zach LaVine's extension off his rookie deal. The NBA is moving its season up, the start of it, to October 17th for the regular season, about 10 days earlier than usual. And with that comes the rookie deal extension a day ahead of that. Zach LaVine says he's going to be ready for training camp. He told ESPN that he expects to be a full go. I don't expect the Bulls to let him be a full go in training camp in the, what, 4 or 5 preseason games they'll probably have now instead of 8. And I don't expect him to be a go on opening night. But that's just another factor into it. Just wanted to throw the LaVine thing out there. He says he's doing great, but we still expect the Bulls to use probably extreme caution, if not quite a bit of caution.
Yeah, you know, I actually talked to LaVine, you know, one-on-one, not obviously in an interview, but I just kind of saw him out there and chatted with him out in Las Vegas. First of all, he's a really cool guy, and I'm going to really enjoy covering him, like, just from a media standpoint. But as far as his health is concerned, he told me he's ahead of schedule with his rehab. Everybody I've talked to, like, we talked to Tom Thibodeau about him. I talked to some of the Timberwolves guys. I talked to, you know, other people kind of who have spent time around him. All of them absolutely rave about his work ethic. All of them say he's doing great in his rehab. I think it would be incredibly foolish and short-sighted for the Bulls to let him play on opening night. Because it's like, okay, they're rebuilding. They didn't trade for him to help them win this year. They traded for him to help them win in 3 or 4 years. They don't want him to come back a little bit earlier than, you know, the timeline projected and have him have a setback with the injury, and then maybe that messes up the next 4 years. So I don't know. I would be surprised if he played on opening night, but, you know, all signs are pointing to him. You know, maybe he's not going to be out till February or March. He might be back in, like, if not right at the beginning of the season, maybe like late November, December, January, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that seems a little bit more realistic now. I think we mentioned January 1st before. If he's doing as well as he says he is, that would make sense. Like you said, sometime in December, just wait out 1 month in the regular season or so, late November. Anything else we need to touch on? Did want to point out that Antonio Blakeney, guard for the Bulls, is probably the most impressive Bull in summer league that we'd never heard of before. He went for 27 points in their playoff loss. He had 23 points on Monday night. The guy can basically jump out of the gym. He got to the free throw line a ton, and he's a guy that could factor into the backcourt mix in training camp, maybe be in play for one of the Bulls' two-way contracts. Is that a fair assumption or a fair question, I guess, we could bring up?
It's possible. I know the coaching staff likes him. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it'll depend on what kind of offers he gets. Maybe he gets a guaranteed camp invite from another team, or maybe he signs with the Bulls in the two-way contract. But, you know, it's not unheard of. You look at Cristiano Felicio. He was a guy who nobody had heard of coming into his first summer league, and then he ended up getting a camp invite and making the team. So I think the two guys on the Bulls summer league team outside of the guys who are actually on the roster that have a chance of making the team are him and Brady Heslip, the point guard, who I was actually just listening to Zach Lowe's podcast earlier today with Jerry Stackhouse, and Jerry Stackhouse coached Brady Heslip in the D League with the Raptors 905 because he's the head coach of that team, and he called him the best shooter in the world, which
better than Steph Curry.
Zach followed up with that, and he said he could go toe to toe with Steph Curry. I don't think that's necessarily true, but like that's how highly some coaches in the league think of him. So those are two guys I would maybe keep an eye on for either two-way contracts or camp invites, but I think that'll be interesting to look at. But yeah, those are the two guys. Nobody else has really stood out that much in terms of the other guys on the D-League roster. We actually had a little bit of player movement because the Bulls had so many guys come home or get sent home or have injuries. Duhay Dukan, who was a guard on the Hawks summer league team that beat the Bulls a couple days ago, is now on the Bulls summer league team, and it's worth pointing out he is the son of the Bulls longtime scouting director Evita Dukan, who has been with the team since early 90s, discovered Tony Kukoc, all that kind of stuff. So we've had a little summer league player movement, but other than that, it's been kind of an uneventful week for the Bulls. Like there are other teams where you look at it and you're like, oh, this is exciting, we're gonna get a look at like these really high level rookies, these guys are gonna be huge stars, it's gonna be really interesting. For the Bulls, it's just been kind of more reminders that this team is gonna be really bad next year.
I'm a little concerned if Brady Heslip really is the best shooter in the world, that he's going to go against everything the Bulls stand for in this rebuild and possibly lead them to the verge of playoff contention in another number 13 or 14 pick. Like, that's the worst thing the Bulls can do right now in this rebuild, Sean, is add a Steph Curry-like shooter. Don't you agree? Like, we can't be having, 38 wins for this team.
Well, on the other hand, if you actually can get a guy like that, you know how much money Steph Curry is making right now? On that contract he just signed?
$201 million more in Brady Heslip.
If you can get a guy who can shoot like that, and I absolutely think it's absurd to compare him to Steph Curry, but if you can get a guy who's like that good of a shooter and can develop into a good NBA player on a really cheap rookie minimum contract, like that's kind of the point of this whole rebuilding exercise, isn't it?
Yeah,
you
want
to find
a star,
but you also want to be able to find under-the-radar talent.
Yeah, that is an excellent point. You are in Portland for what, another week or so visiting your family?
Yeah, week and
okay.
a half.
Okay. So we'll play the Locked On Bulls podcast game by ear by way of schedule and do the best we can. We don't love the remotes either. The cross-country podcast, but we do the best we can, so we'll let you know about the schedule, keep you updated on it. You can follow Locked On Bulls on Facebook and Twitter by its name. Follow Sean at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlund. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. And what? Most of all, subscribe to the podcast, Sean.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere else you can find podcasts, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network. The whole network is doing some really awesome work. We will be back with you guys next time. Thanks for listening.